This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
A lot going on to talk about in Douglas County. Matt Hill is the executive director of the Douglas Timber Operators. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Kyle.
So we haven't talked to you in a while. I guess let's start out with kind of an overall look at some of the highlights, if you want to call it that, of DTO's work in the last few months.
Yeah, I guess it's been primarily just getting back to normal or the new normal. Douglas Timber Operators is, as always, monitoring the federal timber policies and programs with the Umpqua National Forest, the local BLM, and the larger trends affecting the market and supply and demand, and making sure that the community is aware of those issues and how it affects our local economy.
Now, we have been talking about the fair today, and DTO is traditionally always out there.
Yeah, we've got a tent up over by the exhibit hall. It's a smaller tent than we're used to because we're going to be building a permanent structure there. So this year we just put up a small tent. Same information as we always have. We have a lot of great partners out there. We've got Wheel of Forestry to test your forestry knowledge and win some prizes. And we're actually raffling off the tent itself. So if people want to come by and buy a raffle ticket, you might walk away with a nice big tent.
Wow. And so out there all week?
Yeah, we're there all week from 10 a.m., 11 a.m. till 7 p.m. We've got a big log truck out front. You can't miss us.
Wow. So, and we'll remind folks about that again later. A lot of things that have been going on. One of the things where DTO seemed to weigh in early on was some of the controversy, if you will, about an initial decision regarding the Rock Creek Hatchery. Fast forward to from then to now, how do things look? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, there's a few things happening there. One is that the county, Douglas County, and the Umpqua Fishery Enhancement Derby sued the state of Oregon over over the Fish and Wildlife Commission's decision to terminate the summer steelhead program out of Rock Creek. A judge sided with us and joined the stoppage of that program, therefore directing ODFW to continue the program. So what happened is ODFW released the juvenile steelhead that were being held at Rock Creek into the river, into the North Umpqua. They collected broodstock from this year's summer steelhead coming up there, and that broodstock is being hatched and raised for release next year. In terms of the merits of the lawsuit, and this is strictly over the summer steelhead, there'll be a hearing on the merits before a state judge in September. On shifting to the hatchery itself, it of course mostly burned in 2020. ODFW is going through a process of evaluating options for reconstruction, ranging from not doing anything to full reconstruction with the most modern technology possible. And of course, most of our folks are urging them to rebuild, make it better than ever, and with the best possible science and awareness of what they need to do for fish in that basin.
So for folks coming from the other side, what are some of the reasons out there why they think it shouldn't be rebuilt?
Well, for some folks, they don't want any hatchery fish in the river, and therefore any hatchery is bad. We disagree strongly. Most of the Indian tribes in Oregon disagree strongly. The tribes want fish in the river. They want to be able to catch fish. They have subsistence in fishing rights and agreements with the state of Oregon to harvest those, and as do the people of the state of Oregon. And so it really just comes down to a question of whether or not what role hatcheries play in sustaining fish in the river. We're seeing excellent returns of fish this year, even with the presence of hatchery fish in the river. So in my opinion, that's not the issue. The issue has been all along ocean conditions, predators, bass, seals, sea lions, and river conditions, and water temperature, water quality. Those things are affected by major forest fires, and so that's why there is a huge connection between the management of our public lands and forests and the health of our rivers and fish that live in them.
So that's why you think that declining numbers have been seen?
I think it played into it. There are certainly changes that happen with spawning grounds like Rock Creek that were totally obliterated by the Arch Creek fire. Stream temperatures skyrocketed after that because you nuked the riparian area and the shade that helped keep those water temperatures down, which was already a challenge up in Rock Creek. But there are all sorts of groups, whether it's ODFW, BLM, Partnership for Umpqua Rivers, and others who are trying to restore and repair the Rock Creek watershed so that it's a good place for fish to live.
And what do you think, just in terms of looking at that, I remember right after the Archie Creek fire, you had gone up really at the front end of things and looked around and talked about how long, you know, it would be before it returned to what it looked like the day before. And from your vantage point then, maybe a lot of us wouldn't even be alive by that point. Have you seen any shifts to your thoughts there?
No, it'll be a very long. It'll never look the same. First of all, it may look similar hundreds of years from now. When I hike around there, my family and I just hiked up Swiftwater North Umpqua Trail, and you know it's hot. The grasses and fine fuels are shoulder height. It's not the lush ferns and mossy area that it was before. All the trees are dead. Same with Fall Creek. You go through there. Beautiful wildflower show, but all the trees are dead. And it's a very different experience, and it won't look anything like that for hundreds of years.
After the Archie Creek fire, from the private landowners and some of the other folks, there was a lot of move to get things, you know, cleaned up, and we would see scores of log trucks pass our building back and forth every day. Where are they at on that?
Well, for most of the industrial private forest lands, the salvage effort ended very quickly after the fire. Most of that wood got out fast. The vast majority of that area has already been replanted on private ground. There may be some smaller private landowners that are still getting a couple logs out at this point, 2 years after the fire. It's got to be a pretty big log to retain value. There's still a little bit of federal wood coming off of it. You still see some black logs coming off, but some of those may be from last summer's fire too. Up there, Jack Fire, or Big Hamlin, things like that. So it's pretty much wrapping up, and like I said, on private land, it's been harvested. The new trees are growing. It'll be greened up in a couple years, and you'll start seeing vast differences between massive amounts of standing deadwood on federal land and young growing green forests on private.
Now, if I understand it correctly, for a lot of the private landowners, you are replanting over time, so you are harvesting a certain area, but you've got more growing. But this event caused everything to start over.
It set the clock back to zero. And virtually every stand of trees within the Archie Creek fire area went from, you know, anywhere from a decade old to hundreds of years old, and they all got reset to zero. And where they go from here depends on what you do after the fire. And like I said, in some of those federal areas where all the conifers are dead and it's just grasses and shrubs, it may never come back as conifer, at least for hundreds of years, because there's no seed source left.
Interesting. Now, what about the impacts on the timber industry as all the cleanup was going on? That sent a lot of logs to mills, et cetera, but where are things looking now there?
Well, things are getting back to normal. It obviously reprioritized where logs were coming from and prices and that type of thing. It affected inventory for mills for decades, because you lost some of those younger stands that weren't merchantable, so they never got sent to the mill, and you just had to start over with them and get rid of the small woody debris. So the industry is still adjusting to that and kind of recharting a course for its next 40 years in terms of log sourcing. Otherwise, we are back on track. Timber is getting harvested the way it normally has, mostly green sales right now. There haven't been any major fire events in the county this summer, which is wonderful. Which means that we can do business as usual with all the precautions that come along with fire season.
Going to take a break at Inside Douglas County. More when we come back with Matt Hill, Executive Director of the Douglas Timber Operators. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com. 1245 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson at 1, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Tomorrow, we'll have Sam Lee talking about 4-H and FFA and some of the aspects of the Douglas County Fair as it begins on Wednesday. Matt Hill here is the director of the Douglas Timber Operators, kind of covering a lot of different DTO-related topics. What about any shifts this year in federal forest policy that are having local impacts? Is much changed in 2022?
Primarily what has changed is the federal government is throwing more money at fire every year. They're upping the amounts that are going out there, both for suppression as well as for pre-fire fuels treatment, and I think there is an interest on the part of both political parties to do something different, because clearly what we're doing now is not working. There's disagreement over what's not working, but there is agreement that we need to do something different. And so I see more funding for fuels reduction efforts in what we call the wildland-urban interface, which would be around homes, towns, that type of thing. Not a lot of landscape scale activities. There are formulas for where to prioritize these projects, and that is what concerns me a bit. I see the federal funding going to places like Bend, Sun River, Mount Hood, where you've got a lot of very expensive vacation homes around the edges of national forests that are at risk of burning and are at risk of burning. But our forests have burned. Our homes have burned. And same with the McKenzie, same down on the Rogue-Siskiyou. I would like to see more of that funding brought here to the Umpqua and to the BLM lands, and to get work done across the landscape, because we don't know where fire is going to strike next. If we did, it'd be very easy, but we don't. So we need to be prepared for it anywhere it could land.
And as we saw last week with the state forestry officials, it's kind of a changing landscape. They're still trying to address, figure out how to best address legislation from our legislature in Salem as well, and getting some pushback and kind of reshuffling and re-sort of starting some of the processes there about how to implement some of that.
Right. I think their intention was right for getting a map out there to show people what their, you know, estimated risk is. But that's just an estimate. Each fire is different. Fire behavior changes. So you can't know for sure what your risk is. It could look low on a map, but be pretty high in reality. We had people in the Archie Creek fire, one logger who had clear-cut 75 acres around his house still burned. So in some cases, if the fires are big enough, it doesn't matter how much defensible space you have, it can still melt your house down. Other than that, you know, I think that there's a growing concern from my folks that we're just leaving so much deadwood on the landscape that it's fueling the potential for future fires.
What about the U.S. economy and inflation and even the housing market and real estate right now? Is that having an impact locally?
It's beginning to. Increases in mortgage interest rates and lending rates for new home construction is certainly changing the housing market, and that'll start at some point driving down lumber prices, if not a lot. But right now, prices are still pretty good. Log prices are high, so we're doing well. But, you know, these things change, and the industry, you know, enjoyed a pretty good year or two and certainly prepared for changes in the future.
Now, as a timber organization, you work with a lot of other organizations. How are some of those relationships going on right now? Maybe some of the things you're working on together?
Sure. I mean, our tent out at the fair is a great example. We've got Douglas County Small Woodlands Association out there. We've got DFPA, our partners in fire suppression. We've got the State Fire Marshal's Office, Community for Healthy Forests, UCC. All are bringing informational materials out there. So We're just partnering with anyone who can help, you know, get the word out about forest management, what it means, you know, either to the economy, to your home, to your lifestyle, and or to your recreation. And so many people in this community know so much about forestry and ecology and forest management that it's just really impressive. And so I think our knowledge base is high. We want to keep it that way. So that people can make informed decisions about these things and also understand the policy implications when the government tries to do something different.
How does it go in terms of maybe talking to folks that sometimes or often will have opposite or at least diverse opinions to what DTO wants to work on? Do you guys kind of communicate back and forth even though you maybe don't agree?
Sometimes in court we do, but we're usually on the other side of the aisle. I think it really boils down to, you know, what do you want to do about fire? That's the existential risk and threat out there. And either you want to do something about it or you don't. And you think that just letting fire reset the landscape, destroy millions of wildlife, burn homes, put lives at risk. If you're fine with that, I don't have anything to talk to you about. But if you do want to make changes and there's a wide diversity of options on how to do that, I'd love to sit down and talk to folks about that.
What about working with the state and federal levels on issues that concern you? It seems like it's always an ever-changing thing depending on which side of the aisle is leading the administration, both on the federal and state level.
Yeah, it's a shame. You know, there's a whipsaw effect as you go back and forth between political parties and administrations, and especially when you've got, you know, generational changes that need to happen out in the forest lands. We've got litigation from the counties over the management of the ONC lands. That's still ongoing, and the current administration is appealing that and trying not to change the management of BLM lands here. So it's hard. The congressional folks, I think, are serious about fire. They may disagree with it. They may disagree about timber harvest. But I think all of them in good faith, you know, don't want to see what has been happening. And when we look south of us to California, the disasters that are happening, the towns that are being wiped off the map, that is heading north. I mean, it just is. Our fires are changing here. And what we see down there is just a glimpse of our own future here in Southern Oregon if we don't do something differently.
Now, the weather this year, to this point anyway, has been helpful, though I see very much of a dry streak ahead and warm temperatures. Do you realize, and this is a bad pun, that we're not out of the woods yet?
Right. Southern Oregon burns later. Most of our ignitions are late July through mid-September. So we're really just in the middle of our own fire season in terms of ignition of major fires. Things are still drying out. Fine fuels are fully cured. Hot weather ahead. We had a red flag warning up in the Umpqua National Forest last night through tonight. There's a lot of time still out there. That wet spring was nice in terms of delaying the beginning of fire season, but it also grew up those fine, flashy fuels that can ignite very quickly. We just saw a fire here in Roseburg this morning just across the road. All that brown grass can take off pretty quick, and so that those circumstances are still a challenge across the landscape.
As we get ready to wrap up, remind folks again what you've got out at the fair beginning tomorrow.
We've got a big log truck you can check out. We've got a lot of information about forestry, fire, all the latest conditions and fire information from DFPA, information about defensible space from the state fire marshal. We've got forestry trivia and prizes. And like I said, you can win the tent itself if you put in a raffle ticket. We'd love to get rid of it. I don't want to take it down, so please come out and win it.
All right, Matt Hill, Executive Director of the Douglas Timber Operators. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Kyle.
1257 News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.